time where we're asking people to do way too much in healthcare, which just leads to burnout. What are we doing today to make sure our patients have the best experience? And how will, in that process, benefit the community? Everything that we do has to always be focused on purpose. When I look at why some leaders in my career have been successful, is
what would the world look like if more leaders led with heart? Today's guest believes that true leadership isn't about titles or authority. It's about empathy, purpose, and uplifting the people around you. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead and stay ahead of the game, because we believe that great leaders aren't born or made. They are constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby, and joining me as my co-host today is Darren Bridget, and we're both from Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. We're thrilled to welcome Jeffrey M. Roche to the show today. In today's episode, Jeffrey shares why heart-centered leadership is more impactful than any title will ever be, how listening to and empowering frontline workers transforms organizational culture, and the role of empathy in creating a sustainable and resilient workforce.
Tell us your story.
Yeah. So just like you, obviously, you know, as the son of a nurse, I always tell people, you have the best upbringing when you have a mother that's a nurse, because not only do you have someone to take care of you when you get hurt, but you also have somebody who in the community is known. And so, you know, like you, my mother, you know, actually at a young age earned her nursing degree at a time when my family was actually, my parents were getting divorced, and my mother was raising both my brother and I. And my most vivid memories are, you know, that process. But then also as I went through my childhood, my mother was a labor and delivery nurse. And so many of my friends' parents were experiencing my mother as their families were expanding. And so I can remember, you know, open houses, for example, my mother and I would be going into school and families would be like, oh, you know, hey, Gabby, you know, now I see you here, but, you know, before you were taking care of me after I gave birth. And so very vivid, exciting memories. And the irony, Darren, is that the hospital that I served at for the start of my career for a decade is the same hospital my mother served at. We were not there together. But I always tell the story that the most iconic part of that is that my mother was part of the nursing team that started the NICU. I was actually part of the team that expanded the NICU. And so as I was going through minutes and history of the NICU, I see all this fingerprints and history of the work my mother and her colleagues did. And then I got to be a part of the team to expand it. And also our CEO is a nurse. And so my whole life has just been, you know, nurses influenced.
That's awesome, because there's such a special role that nurses have. I know we were talking about this earlier. My mom is lamenting that that role doesn't exist in the same way that it used to. And I think you were saying that, like, nurses are still those kind of great people that bring what is for you like a segue into leadership, right? Like, so those nurse qualities are things that you think should be showing up in leaders. That's how you're really effective. But yeah, there's a little bit less room for it these days in actual healthcare. Can you talk a little bit about how this has informed your approach to leadership?
100%. And let me just say, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, to your point, how your mother started and did work at Stanford. For those that haven't seen the Stanford I Am Human video, it's so worth it and valuable, because it speaks to what all of us should get back to in healthcare, which is the fact that we're all humans. We all have our needs. We all have challenges. But ultimately, when we're in healthcare, we're there to serve. And we have to recognize that, you know, we're at a time where we're asking people to do way too much in healthcare, which just leads to burnout. Which is why our nurses and others are not able to be the best that they can be. And ultimately, that means they can't be the best for our patients. But I'll tell you, where I learned so much of who I am today was, yes, through my mother, but then also through my nurse CEO. I was blessed to start my hospital career in 2008. And when I started, our interim president and CEO was our former CNO. And ultimately, she was made permanent. And, you know, this was a leader who had served in healthcare for 40 plus years, but never forgot her humble beginnings. And she also was just a heart-centered person in the most beautiful ways. You know, she was the type of leader who, you know, she would regularly say to me, yes, I'm a CEO. People want to see me driving a Mercedes or a BMW or an Audi, but I'm going to drive my Hyundai because I'm here to serve. And, you know, she was the type that did not care about the title, didn't care about anything other than making sure that our patients and our team had the best experience. And she very much believed that we were responsible for the community. And so what I saw in her was just this innate ability to connect with people and lead a team with high performance, but always focus on two things. Every meeting started with, what are we doing today to make sure our patients have the best experience? And how will, in that process, benefit the community? And if we couldn't answer those questions, we wouldn't leave the meeting. And so she was just very grounded. But I'll tell you too, what I learned from her, and I was fortunate to have her as a mentor for 5 years of my time there, was that everything that we do has to always be focused on purpose. And that really not just had an impact on me, but almost left imprints in me where I still to this day will say, what would Kathy do? What will Kathy say about these types of things? And I'm just, you know, incredibly blessed to have had a leader earlier in my career like that, because I'll tell you, I have not experienced one since then. It's been very, very different, you know, comparatively to what I experienced with her.
Well, Jeff, I think that's an amazing story. And, you know, both you and Darren are son of nurses, and I'm not, but I've had my experience with nurses are when my dad was in a hospital going through cancer stuff for 6 months, the nurses were incredible. You know, and they were caring and there for him. And also with our children, the nurses were amazing, you know, and it's so important. And they were so caring and empathetic and great. So I got a bunch of questions for you, but just to start off with, what does it mean to be a leader in your sense? Because I've heard you talk about how we all have the ability, all of our listeners in one way or another are leaders.
Yeah. So, you know, to me, leadership is never about position, title, rank. It's truly about how we leverage each of our own unique qualities to choose whether we lift somebody up or tear somebody down. And to me, it's as simple as that. I mean, we as individuals can be there to support one another, to coach, to mentor, to encourage, to empower. And to me, that's ultimately the role of leadership. When I look at why some leaders in my career have been successful, is they're throwing out ego. They're recognizing, yes, they are, you know, certainly we all have some level of ego. There's no question. But what they're doing is they're focusing more on supporting others rather than themselves. And so to me, it's really that foundation that we're there to serve and we're also there to help others. And that's where I've always seen the difference between really effective leaders and those who want to call themselves the leaders. But ultimately, those folks are just truly about themselves.
I also want to say again, I love the story about your CEO and how she really modeled the behavior that inspired you. And you talk about how not having the opportunity to have a leader like that since. Can you give us an example of a, doesn't matter who it is, but somebody who tore down that and was a poor leader?
So in an organization that I served in a few years ago, I, you know, had the unfortunate experience, frankly, of working for a leader who, you know, clearly had no emotional intelligence at all. And it was just abundantly clear to me that this individual just cared entirely about themselves, but didn't care about others and was at that very high level of leadership. And so it didn't really matter. And the attrition, the lack of retention, the challenges in recruiting were just very abundant. And yet there wasn't any recognition. And what was interesting to me was other members of the senior leadership team would acknowledge it, but they wouldn't do anything about it. Whereas I was, you know, I wasn't going to sit back because to me, when you choose to tear people down, to me, that's almost like going to put me in a fight or flight situation. And, you know, I generally am going to choose to fight because what I learned, particularly from Kathy, is that you can still choose the fight, but do it with empathy and compassion. And you can pose questions to toxic leaders in a way that, yeah, they may not like it, but you're still doing it with the right reason, right cause. Ultimately, I, you know, did not end up staying very long at that organization. But what I did do is certainly fought the good fight while I did. And I also brought some people who I knew needed to get out of that organization with me into other organizations. Because I just know when you're in those environments, we all deserve so much better, but our health also deserves much better. And people really don't realize how toxic and how damaging it can be to our health, both mentally and physically, when we're in those environments.
I got to thank you first, Jeffrey, because I'm in the middle of rebuilding and kind of really investing into a class on dealing with conflict. And you just gave me a good reason for actually why, if you manage it right, you can still kind of dig in and fight. If you need to, you just need to do it in a way that actually still is open and has some empathy. So thank you for that.
To your point, I learned that from my healthcare experience. So I don't know if both of you've ever done a crucial conversations training, but in healthcare, like when you do a crucial conversations training and you practice it, one of the things about that is the key word crucial. And sometimes you have to have a crucial conversation to actually move that needle forward. And so we used to do those trainings often. And I'll tell you that not only would we do them, but then we would have to practice them. And there were times where we had interdepartmental challenges, and our director of organizational development would come in and coach us through it. And I'll never forget the time where I actually went through the training multiple times, but she said to me, she's like, wow, the growth I've seen in you to have that crucial conversation. She said, I wouldn't have wanted to be that other manager on the other end of it, but you absolutely made sure they understood where you stood. And then from there, we moved forward. And so I'm a big believer you have to have a crucial conversation.
I'm curious, can you share with us one of the questions that you would ask a toxic leader?
Sometimes it's, you know, in my experience, if I think back to an example that comes to mind, one of the questions that I asked the toxic leader was, did you really mean the tone in that communication? Or did you actually think about how your tone could impact another person? And in that case, the leader, you know, got defensive immediately. And I said back to them, obviously, your actions now demonstrate that you didn't think about the tone, but I'm going to encourage you to give thought to it. We don't have to agree in this moment, but I will tell you, I know how others felt. It's really just reframing and coming back to putting it back on them. Now, in this case, that leader didn't change, and that leader still unfortunately sits in that exact same role today, and I know is just tearing people apart all the time. But, you know, look, I do believe that others have to hold people accountable, and we have to challenge those types of individuals. I will be the first to say that, unfortunately, I think there's far too many leaders like that still in many organizations. And we've got to be willing to take them on respectfully, diplomatically, empathetically, but also with a crucial conversation.
That's very interesting. Good advice. I mean, and of course, the way that you describe that sounds like from a coaching perspective. If it was my boss and I, it's always a little bit delicate, but I appreciate that you're saying that you have to be willing to take it on. Look, if we lived in a world where all of our leaders were inspired by nurses instead of like the chief surgeon or I don't know, you know, some, you know, the hotshots of the world, we might not need to do it as much, but all of this sort of wraps around this idea of heart-centered leaders. So as we get into like accountability and some of these other topics and also developing your empathy, let's start with empathy. And I was excited to talk to you about this because a lot of the really good research, speaking of Stanford, comes from Jamil Zaki, who's a researcher on empathy at Stanford. And he talks about empathic concern, and it really comes from the world of healthcare where people have compassion fatigue. Can you talk a little bit about he's basically talking about the right, how to tune into empathy so you don't feel so much that it overwhelms you. You more feel like you want to help. Can you talk about what empathy means to you from your perspective and the kind of empathy that leaders and others should aspire to?
So, I mean, you know, the most obvious example when I think of empathy, it's really that extra effort that one is taking to understand where and how someone is feeling the way that they are. And none of us can ever say that we're going to walk in another person's shoes, but we absolutely should be able to say that we're going to give them the opportunity to share with us what those shoes or that experience may be like, and that we're not judging, we're not criticizing, we're simply listening and acknowledging what they are feeling and facing. And to your point, healthcare is a great example of that. However, this is where I do believe over time, the system kind of idea of healthcare has caused us to forget a lot of those most important points. And I'll also argue that even in the educational setting of our healthcare programs, we're not modeling the way enough to talk about how important humanity, how important empathy are. You know, the Gold Foundation, you know, which does some amazing work, has a tagline that they call keeping healthcare human. And last year I had the opportunity to attend their annual conference. And, you know, one of the things, a group of us were on a corporate panel talking about why corporate organizations need to care about keeping healthcare human. You think about it, and I'll give you the example. You know, I was sitting at this event, and, you know, here I am representing, you know, a very large global medical technology company. And an individual asked a question immediately that made me think, oh my gosh, we sit in 2023 and we still haven't moved the needle. And here was her question. She said, as you can tell, I'm disabled physically. She said, do you think there's that much imaging equipment that I can easily get into to have my needs scanned for them to determine the diagnosis of various medical issues? And so then I'm immediately sitting back and thinking, obviously, I really don't even know the answer to that question. But what I do know is she's going through a lot of pain right now to have brought that up. And so there was other people on the panel that immediately wanted to respond to her. And when I had the chance, I said to her, I want to thank you for having the courage to sit in front of this room and bring that up. And I want to acknowledge to you that I know our healthcare system has so much more work to do to be equitable. And it's a shame that you have to have been the one to bring it up to us after all these years. But I want to learn from you, and I want to help all of us learn from you so that we can do better, not just for you, but for everybody else. And afterwards, some people said to me, you know, was that rehearsed? And I said, no. I said, in some ways, I've been trained on this, yes. But I was in pain for her, because that is the reality of so much of our healthcare system. Still in 2024, now this was 2023, but it's the reality. We still sit at a time where we still, even on a learning end, if we want to be honest, right? Like from a health literacy standpoint, we still communicate with patients like we think they're all super educated. And look, we need to communicate with them in a way that reaches them. That's why we lost people during COVID. It's why we lost people in other situations, because we don't communicate with them in a way that they understand it. And that's why I'm just so passionate about this, because ultimately we can do so much better.
On that panel, you could imagine people who are moved to want to try to help this person and do something positive, but then they just go immediately to, oh, here's solutions for you. And of course, what we see in the workforce, that's what people do all day long. That's what they're paid for. They're really busy. They're burnt out. They just go to solution, solution, solution. And you stopped and said, no, you first be a human. First be a human, acknowledge, recognize this person's experience before you start jumping into solutions. And so I guess my question for you is, like, would you agree with that? And how do we get more of that into the, I just think it's so hard for people. Everything conspires to eliminate that in the workplace, and we need to bring more time and room for people to be a human with each other.
I 100% agree with you, and I also feel that this is sort of those aha moments for us in society, because the reality of it is if you look at the younger generations, they do not want to be told this is how you solve it. I'm a millennial. I don't want anybody to tell me how to solve it. And the Gen Z community also does not want to be told, but what they do want to get to is sustainable solutions. And so, you know, I think far too many leaders talk more than they listen. And I'll tell you what I learned, you know, from some of the best leaders, which many of them were at my healthcare system, was, you know, I had a senior vice president who would always say to everybody in a meeting, everyone here has the opportunity to contribute. Everyone here can say whatever you want to say without any fear of anything. He always built that trust with everybody. And what I saw him do, which is really powerful, especially in healthcare, is he built the trust with the front lines. And so one of the things he built, which I loved, was a Fresh Eyes program. And literally what that meant was, instead of a clinical and a non-clinical person, you know, being separate, we would walk the healthcare grounds, both inpatient and outpatient, together. And we would identify any issues that were an environment of care challenge, any challenges with patients, and we would go after it together, and then we would come back and solve it together. And it was very powerful. And what I learned in that process was he gave voice to people who never felt that they had a voice. He gave voice to the unions in healthcare. You know, this was a leader who, when it came to union negotiation, the union would request that he be at the table. And the executives on our end would request that he be at the table because there was such trust that was established and built. And what I learned in that process, though, was he always believed that the solutions are actually going to come from those closest to the work. And so I'll give you a real life example that for me, I'll never forget this. We were literally walking with a group of nurses, environmental services aides, as well as patient care techs. And it was myself, it was my senior vice president, and a few other executives. And we literally were just walking because we were a large community hospital with over 90,000 patients in the emergency room a year. Only at the time, you know, 30 some beds. So as you can imagine, this was a nursing staff overworked. Patients were in the hallways all the time. Physicians challenged, just not a great throughput. And we're walking and one of the nurses says to my senior vice president, why do you have this extra waiting room here? Why is this entrance here? Like, we have a main entrance. Why do we use this as an entrance? And he was like, well, you know, it's our valet parking area. And she said, yeah, but you have a beautiful new cancer center. Could you move valet there? And he literally looked at the director of facilities and was like, I love this suggestion. I didn't even think of that. And he looked at the nurse and he said, how long have you guys been thinking about this? And they were like, well, you know, it's been a little time. Well, what we later realized is that they had brought this up to some of their leaders who didn't give it any opportunity to go anywhere else. And so not only did that get addressed, because my senior vice president wasn't a person to let anything go in those situations, but we moved on it and we planned, and in 9 months we had it done. And when we opened it, we made sure it was those team members that got to see it first. And better yet, they got to co-design it. They sat in every meeting with us. They told us what they wanted it to look like. We worked together. I had the privilege of being the co-leader with a clinical leader on it. It was a beautiful project, and it was so driven by them. And so that's how healthcare should be. And that's really how I think most industries, you know, really need to be.
Jeffrey, I love that story because I'm a big believer in having ideas bubble up from the front lines and inspiring people to be curious and come up with ideas. Now, let me ask you this question. Let's say that they came up with this great idea and it was the right thing to do, but you weren't able to execute on it, because that will happen sometimes, you know, for our listeners out there. So if that's the case, how do you keep those individuals on the front lines still motivated to come up with new ideas moving forward, even though this one was shot down?
Well, the key in that is you have to have transparent, active communication on it, right? You have to be honest about why is it that we can't move forward with it. I think far too often we want to hide behind, well, we can't share that with them. Well, the reality of it is unless there's something super, super sensitive, you absolutely can share that with them. And so what I found in healthcare is sometimes you would take a really good idea and the executive leadership team would actually approve it, but maybe the board would reject it. And so, you know, then be honest with them. Unfortunately, the board did not feel that this was in the budget for this fiscal year, but we're going to come back to it. We're going to work on this. And you have to also share with them, are there other ways that that idea could be used in maybe other areas? And so there were definitely times where we had that happen, but we would be very honest with them and we would make sure that they know that there are many times where good ideas don't get to move forward just yet, but we're just going to simply park them in this. We're going to still move it forward at some point to see if we can get that opportunity. And that I think is critical, is the effective ongoing communication. But I'll go back to the trust factor. ultimately, it does also come down to whether they trust that you. Do they believe you really championed their idea and made sure that we did our best? And, you know, I'll tell you, in my experience, because of the trust that I saw my senior vice president build with the frontline team, when he went back to them, and I'll also say he was a very vulnerable leader. So when he would go back to them, if he did not get it approved, you would see him emotionally express that. And not to be an actor, but so that they understood how much he deeply cared about what they cared about. And I can remember one example where he went back to them where it did not get approved. And, you know, he was not happy about it, not happy. And I will never forget a moment where we were all together and there were a couple board members present. And a few of those team members from the front lines went over to the board members and said, "We just want to remind you that we were the ones that submitted that idea. And we want to invite you to come and experience what we're facing." Now, what I knew is that that senior vice president had encouraged and coached them to do exactly that. Because he knew that sometimes the board has to also hear from them. And guess what? That idea went forward. And so it's strategy, it's technique. But again, it would never have worked if he didn't have that trust and rapport with them. And also if he was okay, right? Because he also put himself on the line a bit there too. But, you know, he had been there for 40 years. He cared deeply. And he also said, "We're going to do what's best for the patients." And so he wasn't afraid of any of that.
Those inspiring stories where people connect with others as human beings, they get everybody's voices in the mix. And I like that, they like even coach the people to be able to bring some humanity into the room. That's actually going to make the difference. But I feel like what happens when we work with folks about, like, here's the recommendation to do it, that they're afraid to do it because they feel like they won't be able to control it. If I start inviting opinions from a bunch of other people and I don't take their advice, they're going to be upset. If I, like, what do I do if they have a million ideas and they push back, or I don't like their ideas? Like, I think people are afraid to cross that bridge. So what do you, and I think it goes with, like, that you can develop your empathy and you can develop those skills so you can effectively have that conversation. It includes things like transparency and vulnerability. But how do you, like, what do you say to those people who are like, "Honestly, I'm just a little bit afraid to do it"?
Yeah, I think it's super important that we have to coach and model the way. And you know, especially in those circumstances, show them and practice and prepare for that scenario and various scenarios. Because ultimately, that's what leadership is all about. And so in that scenario, I know that he coached them. I know that he prepared them for that. And why that's important, to your point too, is sometimes you can get intimidated. You know, this is the chairman of the board. The chairman of the board could also just, you know, happen to be a bank CEO, right? Like, now, you know, the irony is that they were also customers, right? So he's probably not going to, you know, say no because they're also his customers. But, you know, that piece is still very important to understand that, you know, it's very possible he may say this. Well, then how do you respond? And one of the things that I believe is super important in there is to give some grounding principles in that coaching. In healthcare, it's all about the patients. So come back to that. Well, I believe this is important because this is how it's going to benefit our patients. And then when they respond with whatever, come back to it. But we're a healthcare system that cares deeply about patient experience. We know HCAHPS is very important to us. And ultimately, what we're seeking to do here is to make it better for our patients. Yeah, but, and you come back, you just reiterate and come back to that. Even if you don't get what you want, in my opinion, when I think about, you know, as a young kid, when my grandmother, who grew up in Germany and, you know, grew up at a very challenging time in Germany in the 1930s, she would always tell me, "You can still kill somebody with kindness." And I always remember that because, you know, there was definitely a lot that she experienced that she rarely would ever want to talk about growing up as a young teenage girl in those years. But she would say, "You can still smile and make them feel that smile." And so, you know, sometimes you have to be prepared and prepare others for that. I have a book here and it's really interesting. My mother is actually in the process of getting it translated that talks about her upbringing. And it's really, as I, every page that my mother shares with me as she's doing this process is, reminds me how fortunate I was to not only have a grandmother like her, but also I'm amazed each and every time as I learn more how she lived and how she carried her life. Because what we're learning in this book, which was written by a relative of hers in German, is like her whole upbringing. And, you know, she lost most of her family, lost her parents before she was 13, lost most of her siblings in the war. You know, most of them, I mean, she didn't have a childhood and she couldn't even live in the same home because the Russian soldiers were after the younger German women and girls at the time. And so, but you would never hear her ever say anything negative about any of them. She would just say, that was the time that we were all living in. And so it's a really interesting, you know, experience now to kind of go through this book.
I'm sure it's helped you with your resilience and being able to reflect back on, you know, how, that you came from a family like that with your mother and your grandmother. And it's, that's incredible. What I was getting at is, you talk a lot about heart-centered leadership, and you talked about your boss earlier, and I believe I've heard you say yourself too, is having this innate ability to connect. And some of our listeners, Jeffrey, might be saying, okay, well, maybe that's good for him, but I don't think I have that. Is the ability to connect, is it a learnable skill?
I do believe so. And I think that when you serve on a team or serve with a leader that cares about you both personally and professionally, even if that's not a skill you have today, I believe it is a skill they can help you develop. I'll give you an example. I had a team member that I had the privilege to be their leader in a healthcare system. And actually I've led, had the opportunity to be, have this member of my team on my team in another organization as well. And when I first met this individual, I just knew she had this know-how and this gumption and this passion and purpose that to me was unbelievable, but also was so underutilized. And so I was always looking for ways to connect her better to the executive leadership team because I knew if they would see it, they would believe it. And so I just continued to do that. And this was somebody who in her 18 years at the organization reported to 20 some different people. So it gives you a sense. And finally, we had a chance at one point in time to do a reorg. And my senior vice president also had learned about her through me. And he called me up and he said, you wouldn't believe the deal I just did with HR. And I said, oh, well, here we go again. Because sometimes he did some really interesting things and I'd get a lot of different interesting experiences. And he'd say, I moved this department to be a part of your team. And he said, but I'm not going to be the one that's going to tell them. You are. And when I called this individual, she sobbed. And then I said to her, but it's not going to just be in your same role. I said, because I'm fighting to make you a manager. And she said, good luck. HR is never going to do it. I don't have a college degree. They're just never going to do it. And I said, well, that's that. I'm glad you believe that, but I'm not going to give up. And I worked for over a year until our chief human resource officer looked at me and said, I see you're relentless. I see you're not going to give up. If you and Steve want to do it, just do what you want to do. And I said, well, thank you. I will call compensation and benefits and I will get it done. All I needed was that a year ago. And so we made it happen. And when I called that individual and she had that opportunity, what I saw was somebody who didn't believe in herself earlier on because she had terrible experiences. And I saw this individual who built what became one of our most successful areas of our healthcare system and the most impactful because it was EMS and it was our new EMS service line. And then forward that about a year later, we held a heroes event for our EMS team. And I was the MC and, you know, the team always got nervous when that happened. But what I had done was I let the EMS team know in confidence that I was going to honor this individual because what she had done was truly an accomplishment. And I also know she didn't like anything public. And so I also, you know, knew I needed to make her feel a little uncomfortable from a growth perspective. And so when I did this, the entire room stood up. Now, what was not organized was the standing up part. But what I saw in her was, A, she was sobbing again. But what I saw in her was she built a community, and the entire executive management team, including that chief human resource officer, came over to me afterwards and said, I don't know what you did for her, but you transformed her. And I looked at the chief human resource officer and said, I guess you should have said yes a little bit ago.
Yeah, yeah. Jeffrey, you've told so many good stories. And I think I've heard you say before that storytelling is an important feature of being a leader and just communication. Can you, any advice for folks about storytelling?
Yeah, I do truly, to your point, believe that the more that we can tell stories is also how we can genuinely and authentically connect. And I do believe also that storytelling in the workplace is such an important way to really kind of bring down the temperature at times and make people feel that they can be who they are. Oftentimes, I find that there are some really good leaders, but sometimes they're just put in the wrong spot or they have bad leaders above them, that when they can tell a story, it can allow somebody to get a glimpse of who they truly are. And then that can be transformational, not just for them, but also for the entire team. And so from my perspective, it is truly how we level the playing field and allow, you know, genuine mutual purpose and connection. And my advice to all leaders at all levels is really do a storytelling exercise, focus on it. It's powerful. And what you learn is, I'll give you an example. We did even at Siemens a storytelling exercise back in May. And, you know, I shared actually the story with my colleagues of the day my father passed. And, you know, in that story, everyone said to me, A, only some of them knew that. Some, you know, there were members of the team that didn't know that. But then through that, others were saying, oh, well, I lost my father to that too. I, you know, and then some were saying that they felt like they were in my story because of how the story was told. And so the connection that occurs in those situations is paramount. I grew closer to people that I never would have thought I would have grown closer to just because of that sharing of that story.
I think that's amazing. And, you know, storytelling is so important. Like you're saying, the connection and inspiration and feeling closer to people. And so as we get kind of close to wrapping up, I'm going to see if you could answer this question in a story. So kind of put you on the spot here, but let's just think about what if the healthcare industry had more heart-centered leaders like yourself and were able to really move the needle in that direction, Jeffrey. Fast forward 10 years, give us a story of what the healthcare industry would be transformed into.
I think first and foremost, we would see a true patient-focused healthcare industry that in all facets of the organization would be always thinking about how we serve patients. We would also see a much more equitable healthcare system that would be providing opportunity, access, and true quality of care that would be done in a way that was customized and personalized for each and every patient. And then the final point I would add is we would see a culture that was a magnet for people, that we would see people say, there's no other industry I want to serve other than healthcare. We would see retention at the highest rates that it ever could be. We would see people who would find joy back in the workplace, particularly in an industry that actually for years had joy in many cases in the workplace. And we would see record enrollments in healthcare programs at the academic sector, all the way up to nursing, to medical school as well, because truly what we would have is community. And that really is what healthcare needs more than ever.
It's a good picture. In fact, I'm thinking it could be a nice picture for more than just the healthcare industry.
100%. It would be a nice picture for the country.
Just be 100%. Nice picture for everybody. Well, Jeffrey, I'm just thinking about some of my takeaways from this session. And one of the big things that's standing out to me is this idea that really what you want to look like, this idea of I'm going to tell my mom this, she's going to be so happy, but looking to people like nurses as your inspiration for being a leader. And that really, in that sense, we can all be a leader, because it's about empathy. It's about heart. It's about purpose. I mean, that's where you start, not with, I want to be the boss. And so in that sense, we kind of all have access to leadership. And it is about opening up your heart. It's transparency. It's vulnerability. It's sharing your stories. And I also really like this idea that, like, you can have empathy. You can want to help other people, but slow down a little bit before you just jump to solutions and let show people that you get it. Tell their story before you start telling them what the solutions are, so that you can hear and create a really good environment.
Well, Jeffrey, you've been absolutely wonderful today. And I really like the examples and your transparency and everything you've had to say. Before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to leave our audience with?
No, you know, obviously happy to connect, you know, with anyone to kind of further discuss this. Happy to, you know, connect over LinkedIn, you know, with anybody.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Jeffrey. This has been awesome. Darren, it's been great. And for our audience out there, do us a favor, rate and give us an honest review and let us know what you think. And if you know somebody who's in the healthcare industry, and let's say they're not inspired and maybe getting burnout in their work, because I've heard Jeffrey say this before, it's not so much physical and mental. Sometimes it's just not believing in the work you do. Do me a favor and text them this episode, and maybe they will connect with Jeffrey as well, because I think that they can get a lot of inspiration out from him. So until next time, everybody, please stay curious and keep learning. Have a great day.